All right. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We'll call the Rules Committee for the Senate to order. It's 1:34. Record to reflect that we have Senator Giesel with us, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Begich, Senator Hoffman, and Senator Coghill Chair. We have Senator Reinbold joining us in the room. And today we have Carrie Cooperwriter helping us out today, and Madison Tuitt back here on the LIO teleconference, which, by the way, is becoming more and more important every day. The committee item today that's on our agenda is a confirmation of governor's appointees, House Bill 309, amended on the House. We have Rena who will come and describe the bill before us. We also have staff to the Rules Chairman on the other side if there's questions from the House. But they both agreed, I think, that Rena would be the one to present the bill. So, Rena, put yourself on the record and give us the information on this bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rena Miller, staff to Senator Giesel. So, House Bill 309 relates to confirmation of the governor's appointees. It temporarily extends the time in which the legislature can meet in joint session in order to confirm both the governor's cabinet appointees and appointments to state boards and commissions. Under current law, AS 3905-080, failure to take up those confirmations in joint session before the adjournment of your regular session is equivalent to declining those appointments. If that happens, the appointees would then also not be eligible for reappointment. A joint session of the legislature, however, requires 60 members plus their support staff to get together in one enclosed space, potentially for several hours. And as we're all aware, those current health mandates related to the COVID-19 discourage those large groups, and particularly in enclosed spaces. So House Bill 309 would allow the legislature to defer meeting in joint session to confirm the appointees, which would ensure that those Alaskans who are volunteering to serve on these boards and commissions are not automatically disqualified if your session adjourns without having you meet in joint session. So Section 1 of the bill adds a new section to uncodified law, and it applies only to the 31st legislature. And for those appointments that were presented by the governor during that second session, the legislature shall meet in joint session at any time to confirm or deny those appointments. If the legislature does not meet in joint session by the day that the regular session adjourns, those appointees, this time only, are not considered to be denied. After the legislature does meet at some future time this year to consider those appointments, at that point, failure to act on any of those appointments would be considered a denial of that appointment. The House added an amendment on the floor that provides some special treatment related to the mental health trust advisory position for a term, so that for a member whose term expires March 1st, 2020, the member may not continue to serve until a new member is appointed. The Mental Health Trust Authority has some very special legislative treatment, I believe, regarding that appointment, and they believed it warranted consideration. Section 2 sets an immediate effective date.
Yes, my understanding that the amendment on the floor is regard to a statute that says if the person appointed to fill the seat is not confirmed by the legislature, then the person who stays there, they have to have that seat filled. So the person whose term expired will have to remain. And I think that was not the intention of the governor at this point. So, and certainly not the intention of the House as they sent it to us. We do have Megan Wallace online. We also have Mike Abbott. Maybe what we should do, since we brought Senator Begich.
Well, I was going to ask a question. I thought you were looking for questions. So
I will.
On this topic. Yeah.
The first thing I thought I'd do is have Mike Abbott from Mental Health Trust talk to us a little bit about this particular section, and then we'll get that one taken care of, and then we'll move on to other discussions. Mr. Abbott, you're online. Was I right in my characterization that this seat cannot be vacated, and unless we confirm somebody, then the person who was timed out really has to sit there?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mike Abbott with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. Yes, sir, you're correct. The somewhat unique statute that describes the appointment of and the service of our trustees suggests that until an appointee is confirmed, that the incumbent trustee continues to serve. And we have examples of trustees having served for several years because appointments were withdrawn or failed to be confirmed for different reasons. So that would be the case in the event that under current law, if the legislature failed to confirm, in this case, Rhonda Boyles, then Mary Jane Michael would continue to serve until Rhonda was either confirmed or Mary Jane resigned.
Senator Begich, a question on that?
Yes. Thanks for being online, Mike. So if I understand the way the amendment's written, I see the way it's written is in the negative, so it's difficult for me to fully understand it. But it sounds to me like it's saying the opposite of what you said, that under this amendment, that term expired March 1st, and so that seat would be unfilled if we never got around to confirming Rhonda Boyles. I'm reading that completely wrong, right?
I believe you are.
Okay. Well, that's important.
Through the chair.
Mike, my follow-up question, and maybe this is one for Megan through the chair, is just I want to be sure, you know, some of us, like the senator from Bethel, were here when the mental health trust issue was resolved back in the late 80s. I was working staff at the time, and I remember Representative Porchot, or maybe it was – I think it was representative at that time, eventually became senator. But really, the details of that trust settlement were so complex. I want to be sure that this does not in any way break that settlement. Have you looked at that, Megan or Mike? Just want to be absolutely sure we're not violating that very difficult settlement.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Abbott here. We consulted with the Department of Law yesterday when the House was contemplating the floor amendment, and the Department of Law assured us that the amendment would not affect the Weiss versus Alaska settlement that that I believe Senator Begich is referring to.
And just for what it's worth, we went ahead and dug out the Weiss settlement, and I'll just read a sentence for you on page 15 of that settlement. If the legislature materially alters or repeals any of those provisions, the plaintiffs' sole remedy is a new action allegedly that the mental health trust has not been adequately reconstrued. So
conceivably, if I may, Mr. Yes. Chairman, conceivably, if this notwithstanding language wasn't in here, we would be in violation of the trust.
It's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Mr.
Chairman?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Abbott.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Abbott again. The Department of Law informed us that the amendment is actually affecting statute written 3 years prior to the Weiss settlement. Apparently, the statute that contemplated the formation of the trust and that created the structure of the trustees was actually created prior to the settlement in 1991. And as a result, an amendment to the 1991 statute, which I believe is what is being proposed in HB 309, would not be considered an adjustment of the Weiss settlement from 1994. I'm trying to paraphrase the advice we got from the Department of Law yesterday.
I think that'll help us because we did kind of get bounced between a statutory provision and a court decision, and I think that was very helpful.
That was helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So thank you very much. Megan, we had a question arise on the bill, and I'd like to just throw it to you at this point. By the way, thanks, Mike, for coming. I don't know that you can listen in, but I think that settled the question we had with you. Megan, on page 2 of the line of the bill, lines 3 and 4, the question came up with regard to the governor during and after adjournment of the second regular session? And maybe I can have Rena just formulate that question so that I don't mischaracterize it. Rena?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So actually, on line one of the bill, at the beginning of this new section one, it references that the following provisions are for appointments presented by the governor during the second regular session. But on page two, lines three to four, this could be read because of the words following governor on line four of during and after adjournment of, that during and after adjournment of relates to the appointments presented by the governor and not to the wording on line three of meeting in joint session during and after adjournment of.
Did that make sense to you, Megan?
Through the chair, for the record, Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. The provision, subsection B, which is page 2, lines 3 to 7, I'm not sure I completely understood the question, but maybe I can articulate what the intention or the how I understand the provision to operate is that it is saying that once the legislature meets in joint session to consider the names presented by the governor during the second regular session of the 31st Alaska State Legislature, so in other words, the names that have already been presented by the governor, that once the legislature meets in joint session to consider those names and any other names that might have been presented by the governor between adjournment of the second session of the 31st Alaska State Legislature and the time that the legislature actually meets in joint session, that if the legislature does not take up any of those names, then it will be tantamount to a declination of confirmation. And there was a unique circumstance, I think it was 2008, 2009, where the legislature had to come back in joint session during the interim to confirm an appointment made and presented by the governor during the interim. And so that language is included to accommodate that rare circumstance where the governor might actually present a name to the legislature during the interim. But otherwise, this provision would not modify the general practice that the governor could wait until the beginning of next session to present names of interim appointments.
Does that satisfy members?
That description?
Yes. Yep. All right, so that's the bill before us. And is there other comments, Senator?
Well, I'll comment. I want to move an amendment that I think further clarifies, and I want Megan to stay online to make sure that I'm doing that.
I'll go away, Megan.
Okay.
Yes, so let's entertain amendments unless there's further discussion before we get to amendments. Seeing none, Senator Begich.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I want to move amendment 31-LS1719/M.A.1.
We'll call that amendment number one. I'll object.
So let me just explain what I'm trying to do here. Under this, the consideration on line three, page two, says after the legislature meets in joint session assembled to act on the appointments, we may not meet. We don't know for sure if we're going to meet. We may even be prohibited from meeting. And it was something that was brought up by staff and in my caucus. And so we wanted to wanted to be sure that we put a parameter around that, because that would mean conceivably that it would be left to the next legislature to act on these appointments, thereby taking away our right to act on these appointments potentially. And so the amendment says on November 30th, 2020, or upon expiration of the declaration of public health disaster emergency issued by the governor on March 11th, whichever is earlier, the failure of the legislature to act to confirm or decline, to confirm an appointment presented by the governor during the session will be tantamount to a declination or of confirmation. It's simply trying to clarify that. Otherwise, this is an open-ended section that you've left here, that the other body has left before us, because it's these appointments would be not subject ever to confirmation by this legislature. And that's why I want to hear Megan's.
And I think I would disagree with that. It seemed to me that the first section, A, would require us to do that. But Megan, you might just help us with this, because A and B may, if they work together or not, to help us understand that.
Again, for the record, Megan Wallace, Director of Legal Services. So subsection A does still require that the 31st Alaska State Legislature meet to confirm the governor's appointees. It just modifies the declination provision to state that the legislature shall at any time, which is that language is on page 1, line 11, meet to confirm.
So the requirement is still that this body either meets or that it's a de facto declination.
Mr. Chair, the requirement that the legislature meet in joint session to approve or decline to approve the governor's appointees is a constitutional requirement under Article 3, Sections 20, I believe, I don't have it in front of me, 25 and 26, which provides that the governor's appointees are subject to confirmation by the legislature. And it's my opinion that that's not a discretionary function and that this legislature still needs to meet its constitutional obligation to meet to confirm those appointments.
So our limitation is to this legislature, but we can defer the time, but we can't defer the event.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay.
May I ask a follow-up question?
Follow-up to you and then Senator Von Imhoff.
So, Megan, I'm actually a little confused because what compels us to what I'm trying to get to is under line 13, number 2, if the legislature does not act to confirm or decline to confirm an appointment, the failure of the legislature to act or confirm or decline to confirm an appointment presented is not tantamount to a declination of confirmation on the day of the second regular session of the 31st. So that basically removes the one requirement statutorily that if a session is adjourned, the appointments don't die with the session. But truly tell me, how are we compelled to return to deal with our constitutional responsibility if indeed we can't? That we still have to have a special session called by somebody. Last year we discovered that we couldn't get 40 members of the body to confirm a special session, and it might not be in the best interests of parties to allow 40 to have us gather together, one, and two, the governor could choose not to call us back into special session, citing a health concern or other concerns of gathering 60 or more people together. So how doesn't that create a situation, even under this legislation, where we conceivably could not exercise our constitutional obligation to address the governor's appointees in this legislature?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, the bill before you doesn't contemplate the legislature not meeting in joint session to approve the confirmation. So I guess to the extent that I agree with your comments that it may be possible, but that is not what the bill is contemplating.
Before we get to that, let me have Senator Von Imhoff, and then we'll have your follow-up beyond that.
I guess, so one of the things, I guess to boil it down how I'm thinking is, what if we never meet between now and next January, I'm guessing 19th, what happens?
January 2021.
Whatever it is, January 2021. If we never meet between January and January of 2021, what happens to us legally, to the conferees, things of that nature, number one? And number two, do you want to state the number November 30th versus letting it go all the way till January next year? I mean, we have basically until the start of next session. You never know. Maybe January is the magic date, you know?
If I could respond, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
No, I don't. I just picked a date that I thought was reasonable, but January 19th or the day of the last day of this legislature sitting would be fine. What I don't want to do is be in a situation where we violated the Constitution, which would then call into question every single one of the governor's appointees, because they could all be challenged on constitutional grounds because we never exercised our constitutional authority over any of them.
So by putting the date in here, what you're saying is I'll circumvent the two-thirds vote by putting a time specific.
In a sense, what it does by putting the time specific, Mr. Chairman, to respond to your question is, by putting the time specific, we would then suddenly be exactly as though we had adjourned the session officially, and that the and that those applicants would expire because we never came back. Now, that's because that's what the law says we must do. We must exercise, and that's how we exercise our constitutional authority, either by meeting in joint session or by choosing and dealing with these appointees, or not addressing the appointees at all.
Okay. To that point, Senator Giesel.
So I'll propose something here. The day before the 32nd legislature convenes is January 18th of 2021. So what if it's said on January 18th of 2021, or 30 days after the expiration of the declaration, blah, blah, blah,
or
30 days after the expiration of the declaration of a public health disaster emergency, giving convening time, right? So what about that?
Mr. Chairman, that works perfectly fine for me.
All right. Then the question is, whichever is earlier, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so it says that. Whichever is earlier.
So that brings us to the point of, okay, we got to look at that 30-day window after the declaration for sure, because the January date is always going to be the later date, right? So why then put the January date in there if you're going to give a 30-day period to figure it out, Senator Begich?
Mr. Chairman, because we could continue to extend this declaration.
Okay, got it. That's a good point.
And we could continue to extend it time and time again. And if we aren't in session, the governor could continue to provide his declarations. And if we aren't ever back to convene, that process or power that the governor has under the disaster declaration law would continue to allow disaster declarations until we actually contravened it. And we would have to come together at that time in joint session to do so. So it's to protect us and to protect the legitimacy of the three branches that I'm putting this forward, simply. It's an oversight, I think, in the bill, because the bill, as Megan Wallace says, contemplates that we will come back, but that contemplation may be an error is my issue.
Yeah, and I personally think the closer we get it to the end of our extension, the better, the extension of the declaration that we're forwarding, which is September 1, right? So that gives that 30-day window, all of September, basically, to contemplate either health-wise or capability. Then the question is, Megan, we still have to have a two-thirds polling to do that. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, if the legislature wanted to come back into special session to address the extension of the disaster declaration, it would either need to comply with the polling requirements, or the governor would have to call the legislature into special session, correct?
Okay. Senator Begich?
Mr. Chairman, let me restate my motion, if I may.
Sure.
I'd like to move Amendment 1 with the words, and I will say them for the record, on January 18th, 2021, or 30 days after expiration of the declaration of a public health disaster emergency issued by the governor on March 11th, 2020, whichever is earlier, the failure of the legislature to act to conform or decline to confirm an appointment presented by the governor during the second regular session of the 31st Alaska State Legislature will be tantamount to a declination of confirmation, period.
Any objection to that? Rena, you had a point.
Mr. Chair, for the purposes of legislative legal, it might be helpful to just double-check if we want it to be after the expiration of a disaster declared by the governor, or if the desire of the maker is to instead make it within 30 days of a declaration of a proclamation that the disaster is over. We used a similar benchmark in the disaster extension bill, so it's just a question for legal's guidance.
Let's do this. Let's have Megan draft this up for us with that comment in mind. We'll take an at ease. We'll recess to that. We'll get this drafted up. So, but before we go further, you had a different amendment. Is that still going to be pertinent?
Mr. Chairman, the second amendment would also be pertinent for the same basic reasons. It's just our power, whether or not we wanted to exercise our power.
Okay, I just wondered if us modifying this amendment actually helped that. So,
can I just ask one silly question?
Senator Von Himhoff.
Will the very last sentence will be tantamount to a declination of confirmation, meaning, I legal speak, all the confirmations are become invalid, as in, I just don't know what that means.
Mr. Chairman,
the same as.
Yeah,
tantamount means the same.
The same as in we decline them all.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I want to say. It means that we decline them all.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I may. And yes, that is consistent with our power today under the Constitution, as also described by Ms. Wallace.
The very words of our statute right now. So let's take a brief recess. Would you, Megan, if you could work with the Senator Begich on drafting that the way we had contemplated it in committee, we'll take a brief recess.
Very brief.
And sure then we'll come right back to it, okay?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Again, Megan Wallace. I just want to clarify the last comment that was made regarding a proclamation for earlier declaration that the disaster is over. We want to contemplate that date in this amendment. I just want to make sure that I understood the will of the committee correctly.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Begich.
I think Megan and the chairman will correct me, or the staff, Rena, staff will correct me, but I think she was looking for the wording of the date of when an official proclamation is given, that the content would be the same. The president had indicated 30 days after expiration of the declaration, but what staff was saying was 30 days after the proclamation of the expiration.
But we have there's two lines in here that, Megan, you might help me with. One of them is we have a hard date in our statute as we passed it, and then there is a proclamation capacity that the governor has. And so does that work well with our with the governor's authority at this point?
Mr. Chair, so the current version of the disaster extension bill provides that the disaster will either expire on September 1st or potentially earlier if the governor issues a proclamation declaring that the disaster is over. So if we include that language just so that the committee understands, it will be 30 days after either the expiration of the declaration or 30 days after it's been deemed that there is no longer a disaster by proclamation.
Yep, that's what we're looking for, Megan.
Okay.
All right. Can we go ahead and take a brief recess? We'll take a recess at this point. Is that all right with everybody?
The duration of which is?
Let's give ourselves 25 minutes to do it. All right? All right, thank you. All right, let's call the Senate Judiciary Committee back to order. Just for people's information, we have two members who will be up in a Finance Conference Subcommittee, And so we have two amendments that we wanted to deal with. We are waiting for drafting on one. And with that, Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess at 2:37, I'm withdrawing amendment number one.
Okay. at 2:37. We will withdraw that, and then we'll revisit it based on drafting this coming from Megan Wallace. And with that, there was another amendment, and I'm going to call this amendment number two. So if you want to move the amendment, and I'll object, we'll discuss it.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number two.
And I'll object. We'll call it amendment number two. That's MA.3.
All right. So, Mr. Chairman, MA.3 is another one of those oversights, and it's just simply taking our existing law and making sure we don't inadvertently miss I'm not as articulate as I should be, but today I'm a little. I had just a couple hours of sleep, but what this one does is just make sure that we don't create an inadvertent loophole with the bill, so that we're essentially getting rid of our ability to protect how nominees are appointed. So, this amendment protects the constitutional duty to confirm appointees by closing the loophole that would be accidentally created by this bill that would allow the nominees to serve through the end of the next year's session by making nominees that resign after the end of the regular session to be ineligible to be reappointed, similar to if they had been rejected. So right now, under the law, if a nominee that is appointed looks as though they may be rejected, they can resign from the appointment, wait till we adjourn, and then get appointed by the governor. And so we've always tried to avoid that
right. In
our processes. The problem when we pass this bill is that we will lose the ability to control that.
Yeah.
And this simply ensures that current law is respected. That's all it's trying to do.
Further discussion on this? Well, then I'll remove my objection, and we'll have amendment number two passed. And now we have the newest draft, MA.4, and we'll Carrie, can we call that amendment number three, or do we? Yeah, okay. So Senator Begich?
I move amendment number three and defer to, which is 31-LS1719/MA4, and I would defer to Ms. Wallace, perhaps.
All right, and I'll object so that we can have that discussion. So let's, Megan, are you online? She is unavailable. So what we'll do is we'll take a brief of these while we get her online. All right, we'll call the judiciary back to order. Megan, thanks for taking the time out in your busy, busy schedule to talk us through this amendment. It looks to me, this is, we're on the MA.4 that you just printed up for us, and thank you. This says the earlier of January 18th or 30 days after the expiration of the declaration or our extension of it. Am I reading that correctly?
No, proclamation, Mr. Chairman.
Proclamation, okay.
For the record, Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. I missed your introduction, Mr. Chair. Was that question for me?
Yes. Walk us through how this structure works now that we've seen it in print. I want to make sure that it is actually doing what we thought we were doing. So if you could just kind of walk us through the structure of this.
Sure, Mr. Chair. For the record, Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. The amendment, just like the previous amendment under discussion, deletes the current subsection B in the bill on page 2, lines 3 through 7. And this would operate so that there would be an automatic declination of confirmation upon the earlier of January 18th, 2021, or 30 days after expiration of the disaster declaration, or 30 days after issuance of a proclamation that there was no longer the emergency no longer existed. And so it was restructured to accommodate the occurrence of both expiration of the disaster and issuance of a proclamation declared by the governor before a statutory expiration. And therefore, that's the reason for the structural change. But the amendment before you is intended to replace the conceptual amendment we discussed before recess.
Yeah, I think it does what we want it to do. Senator Begich, any comment?
Just that I think this really does do what we wanted it to do. And, hey, one member on the body says, let's rock and roll.
Yeah, this calls us to action. So with that, I'll remove my objection to the amendment. Is there further objection to this one? Seeing none. Well, that then brings the bill before us, Madam President.
I move the Senate Rules Committee substitute for House Bill 309, Work Order 31, LS1719/MA, with accompanying fiscal notes.
As amended.
Yeah, somewhere it's missing the words and amended, as amended. I'm going to start over, okay?
go to the next
as
page.
Amended.
Sorry. We didn't know if we were going to get the amendments or not.
I'm on the one that says they're made. I'm going to start over.
Okay.
I move the Senate Rules Committee substitute for House Bill 309, Work Order 31, LS1719/MA, as amended, with accompanying and forthcoming fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to moving this bill onto the Rules Committee, who was going to schedule it for the floor? Seeing none, committee substitute for House Bill 309 amended, moves from committee with the individual recommendations. No further business before the committee. We're adjourned at 2:45.